Yes, Lisa.
I'm Lisa Cahill, and I teach in the theology department. And I teach ethics and social ethics. And I'm a great supporter of Catholic charities and Catholic relief services, and I love to use them as good illustrations of trying to approach social and structural change from a religious standpoint. But, the but isn't anything negative about Catholic charities, but rather just about the environment. Like you said that you try to work in a bipartisan way, which I think is great, and that's commendable, and that's appropriate. At the same time, there are, you refer back to Social Security. Well, that's great. That was a long time ago, you know. Mm-hmm. Now we have things like the Affordable Care Act. And it's not just partisan conflict. It's also a question, even in the Catholic Church, of how the social mission is really being supported. I mean, I wouldn't ask you to comment on this, but I would say from my own perspective that, you know, helping the poor does not always come through as one of the top two or three priorities of the U.S. Catholic bishops. So I'm sure you have to negotiate that as well as the partisan situation. So I'd like to hear a little bit more about what you're doing now. I mean, tweaking Paul Ryan's budget is fine, but, you know, what are things, we just had an election, you know, so what are today's equivalents of Social Security and how is Catholic Charities getting involved?
Okay, well, I think, you know, there are programs today that are, that we still very much are after. It's like SNAP. Which used to be food stamps. It's still as critical today as it ever was, but has come under attack tremendously. And I think we were able to fend that off, but for how long, I don't know. And there are pieces of the social system like that. And I think the Affordable Care Act, obviously, was a huge step for us as a country. In getting millions more the health care and health benefits that they need. So we're working and talking with folks on the Hill with all of that. It's been kind of a strange 6 years in the sense that the two entities that we have to dance with, if you will, are the elected officials and the bishops. And they haven't been dancing together for 6 years. And so it's been very difficult for us to try to, you know, make some headway in that space. So a lot of it is political in the sense of what is possible.
Yeah.
And not much has been possible lately.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. As we look at going forward, I think as far as the church goes, one thing that is like super encouraging is Pope Francis.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's very clear about the role of mission in the church and the fact that that should in fact define us. And I think we're coming out of a period, I mean, you're a theologian, I'm not, so I'm a little probably on shakier ground, but to me as a Catholic, we've come out of a period of I don't know how many decades where we've focused on the institutional church at the expense of the mission of the church. And Catholic Charities has suffered because of that in this country. With Pope Francis, it's like all of a sudden he's got our backs.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has changed the game for us. In tremendous ways. And so that's a very encouraging thing. I think bishops who, there have always been bishops who have felt like Pope Francis, but they didn't have a voice. And I think we're turning a corner there slowly, but we're turning a corner. So I'm optimistic about that. And part of the problem, with one more thing about the church, is you look at who have been appointed bishops. In the last 20 years, canon lawyers and seminary rectors who have had no experience in communities, especially with external communities, church communities, yeah, but external communities. And so many of the bishops don't have a clue what Catholic Charities, and they're very suspicious about what we are doing because they, yeah. But again, I think that piece is turning. Politics, on the other hand, you know, like I say, it's been very frustrating for the last 6 years because no one has been dancing in Washington.
Probably a lot of people would agree with that.
Yeah.
Great, thanks. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I just sort of ask...
Please introduce yourself.
Rob Broderick. I'm a theology student here in the doctoral program, doing dissertation work.
Great.
My question, sort of just as a follow-up, is a little bit more about how you understand the relationship of the bishops within sort of under the Catholic Charities umbrella, right? Because, so you've mentioned that a lot of the Catholic Charities programs all happen on the diocesan level. Right, and of course, so the bishops will, get together and they have their sort of interactions through the USCCB. But how, if at all, do they interact sort of under the umbrella of Catholic Charities? What does sort of the national organization sort of do as part of its networking?
Okay.
How does that work?
Okay. Just to kind of talk about the structure, we do not fall under the umbrella of the Bishops' Conference.
Right.
And the only reason, but CRS does, Catholic Relief Service does. The only reason we don't is that we existed before they did, and so, you know, that's historically why we've been there. We do have an Episcopal liaison who sits on our board but does not vote, and that person is our channel to the Bishops' Conference. I also sit on several committees at the Bishops' Conference, so we have representation there, but there's no governance. That flows from that. But on the local level, all Catholic Charities are locally governed and under the bishop. And this gets to be a little strange for us, because when we bring all of our diocesan directors together a couple times a year, each bishop interprets has their own way of interpreting things. So you can have a diocese that sits right next to another diocese, and in one, Catholic Charities can do this program. In another, they cannot because of the bishop. So that's very confusing at times for people.
Yeah.
Again, it goes to what the bishop's understanding of charity is and what we should be doing, and the bishop's understanding of how much they want to be involved in the public square. But it makes for some very interesting times when one bishop is saying, not a problem, it's the corporal works of mercy, go for it. Mm-hmm. And another bishop saying, oh, no, we could get pulled into something there, and so you can't do it.
I guess to maybe specify my question a little bit, situations like that, is there sort of a mechanism within Catholic Charities to allow bishops to sort of dialogue amongst themselves about these sort of issues, or with sort of professionals, or in the event that they are of like mind, to partner in and sort of to teamwork on some issues?
There's no formal mechanism,
okay.
No. And again, I think basically the bishops themselves caucus, if you will. Those who are like-minded talk to bishops who are like similar bishops, and those who aren't, don't. So if you have a situation, though, we could not step in and say, you know, bishop, you really need to, unless the bishop asks us to come in. And, of course, there was a lot of that with the HHS mandate. A lot of bishops said to people, you know, go ahead, provide insurance, do it under duress. And others were saying, no. Yeah. So it was very confusing. That issue for sure.
Yeah.
David.
David Cowan, I'm a visiting scholar here at WASI Center. I've got two questions actually, they're slightly separate. One is, could you talk a little bit about how you interact with other religious charity groups, both Christian and non-Christian, and what sort of conversations you have there, particularly on the kind of the advocacy role? The second question is to say a little bit more about how you actually interact with companies. You use some examples of really groups that are much more at the peripheral of what I would think of as corporate America, the kind of some of the banditry that goes on there. So how do you interact with the different levels of types of corporation, from major to sort of mid-range companies, and who are the people that you're actually in conversation with, in a flavor of some of those conversations?
Okay. So first of all, to talk about other faith-based organizations, even within the Catholic community, there are obviously a ton of other charitable organizations. And so we have groups like the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, Ladies of Charity. They each have representatives on our board, as does Catholic Relief Services and Catholic Health Association, to try to make sure that we're working together. And other Catholic organizations that could be run by religious communities, right, can be affiliate members, and then they have certain rights and benefits that go with that. When it comes to other denominations, we do belong to a consortium of faith-based organizations, and so we meet like once a year to see if there are common issues to talk about, but we meet far more regularly with a couple of them, like Salvation Army, like Lutheran Services in America. I mean, we have some fairly close working relationships with them. But that's about it, I think. There's a group of Hindu folks who were coming together to start their charity. There was no charity, formal charity, but I think they're calling it Sevra Charity, something like that. So they came and spent time at our office looking at what a structure could look like, how we relate, and so that they could get some ideas. So we offered that kind of help and would to anyone.
Do you think there could be more interaction? You mentioned like once a year meeting. Would you suggest there should be more, or would that just be too much of a drain on resources for all concerned?
Yeah, I'm not sure, because what I'm immediately thinking of is how many of those consortia we belong to and that meet. You know, it's I think I had my staff put together how many organizations they represent Catholic Charities, and it was over 300. That as a national office we relate to. Some of them are bigger than others, like Leadership 18, which is actually the largest 23 human services organizations in the U.S. And I chaired that for a fair number of years, and so we're very active there. And there are, you know, that's where we're interacting also with Lutherans and Salvation Army, Volunteers of America, and a few other faith groups in there. So I'm probably, it could help, but I'm thinking, oh my God, more meetings.
The other side of that is if you were to think from a business perspective of the charities, you've got issues there of overlapping costs and inefficiencies by having such a disparate group of organizations, each with their own bureaucracy and infrastructure. And so is there sort of scope for some, let's say, mergers and acquisitions within the charity business?
Yeah, I'd have to say that's probably not high on people's list. Yeah, hostile takeover. Are there benefits to that? Of course. I'm not sure we're at a point yet where people are ready to have that conversation, though.
Any other question also on corporate relations?
Yeah, and that's one that's probably newer for us. We do have relationships with corporations like Home Depot, where they give what percentage of reduction, but it's more, again, philanthropic. But it comes through, you know, when Catholic Charities local agencies buy from Home Depot, I think they get an automatic 8% reduction. And things like that. But I'm thinking more in terms of our local agency in San Jose, California, that is working with Cisco in developing software for social workers. And we're then kind of the umbrella that would take that nationally. But that certainly is where they're bringing their expertise, and something that nonprofits pay a huge amount of money for. Software development, And I think, you know, the fact that they are willing to come in, they're going to do it pro bono. So that's probably the best example I have of a corporation getting involved.
Yeah, other questions? Yes, Mary.
Yeah, my name is Mary O'Brien. I live in Maine, and I've been working as a consultant, working on improving child and family service systems. In this country, I've worked for about 20 years with a project that works on improving child welfare systems, federally funded technical assistance kind of center. And I'm also active in my Catholic Church and the social justice and peace work there, sort of on a community level. So I wanted to say that this book, this Think and Act Anew, is really wonderful. So thank you to Father Snyder for reading it. I'm writing it, and I would recommend it to everyone. It's a great sort of call about the need to address poverty in this country. Father Snyder, in this book you describe a lot of really interesting models, like those B corporations you mentioned that I wasn't really aware of, even though I've been kind of engaged in this work for a long time. So I think, and you say that they won't be models unless they're better known. In this book. So what I'd like to know is your reflections on like what organizations or initiatives are doing a really good job of kind of lifting up things that are working. I mean, you started by gathering these examples by your national listening sessions, but I feel like as people of faith, we need to do more to sort of strategically and creatively kind of lift up things that are working in communities and are connecting people to one another, like the business thing where a business is working on social issues and really connecting to the people that are being helped. So, I just wonder who you think is doing sort of the best creative kind of work in that area of lifting up those things that are working.
That's a good question, because again, on a national level, I don't know. Paul Newman is the name everybody knows, but other than that, I think it's more on us on a local level. Local community level is where things seem to be going. There's a fudge company in Brooklyn that does this, but and they kind of have a national reputation for this fudge. But again, they, I think most of those kinds of things are actually better known community by community.
Absolutely. Well, I complimented the Father earlier on the fact that Catholic Charities, and they did their National Poverty Summit in the spring, around the 50th anniversary of the War on Poverty. They put it on the internet, so you could listen in to the summit from around the country, and I was able to attend, even though I was in Maine. So that was really wonderful, and I think we need to do more of that kind of thing. And if this creative work is happening on a local level, if we can lift it up more, so that using technology, I think, so that people can learn about it in, another state or another country and say, oh, maybe we could do that. That's something that I think is important, and I just wanted to bring it up.
Great. Thanks. Thank you. Maggie.
I just have a question.
Could you introduce yourself to everyone, please?
Hi, Maggie. Coming from antiquity, and the early church, with the new evangelism, wouldn't it be good if in the new evangelism, we preach the gospel, and we tell people, they must share. They must share. Really, on pain of eternal life, they must share. So the thing is, we, in this room, we're all converted, as it were, to Christ and to other faiths of merit. It's just with grateful entities. But not everybody is. So if we follow the new evangelism, wouldn't that help us to re-evangelize people and raise their consciousness about wealth and poverty?
No, definitely, and to, it, but it's a message that not everybody wants to hear. Obviously, it's like I don't go to church to hear about that. You hear that frequently, and so, but yeah, it's an interesting thing. Back when I was head of Catholic Charities in the Twin Cities, we'd have brown bag lunches, and. So one of our employees had spent a year in a kibbutz in Israel. So she was coming and just talking about her experience there. And she talked about it. She says, it was wonderful. She said, because we had this principle that from each according to their ability, to each according to their need. And somebody says, that's Karl Marx. That's Karl Marx. And I said, no, it's the early Christian community. But it's, so you get where people are coming from influences how they hear things. Mm-hmm. And so I think Pope Francis has been able to knock a few people off of their feet, mm-hmm. so they're hearing things a little differently. But you'll see there's pushback that's starting, and it's getting greater. I was in Germany a couple weeks ago at the University of Freiburg, and they were telling me that there's this whole movement there that people are trying to say, well, he really wasn't elected pope, you know, that he is a false pope, and that there are priests who will not, in the Roman, the Eucharistic prayer, will not say his name. And so I'm thinking, well, we're seeing the pushback here from people that this is too much for them, because their image of church doesn't at all, you know, adhere to kind of what he's doing. So, so I'm not sure how the message gets out. New evangelization, of course, I mean, should be key to this.
Question here and then here.
My name is Klaus. I'm not from Germany. The German went to Brazil, so I'm from Brazil.
Okay.
I just would like to let you guys know, and especially you, Father Snyder, first of all, congrats for your work on Catholic Charities. But you're not alone here in the United States. In Brazil, for example, we had elections, and the current president, she's a woman, she was re-elected. And for the last 12 years, we have strong social programs. They're very strict. I mean, it's not about giving only. There are some requirements about education. The women, which is very good, control the budget. It's a very small amount of money per capita. Mm-hmm. I mean, the very poor families. And according to UNO, we were able to jump from a level of 20 million people below the line of extreme poverty, hunger, to 3 million, which is still a shame. But my point is, you're not alone, because there are some people in Brazil. This week, we had some street manifestations, can I say this way? People saying that, come back military man, come back the dictatorship, mm-hmm. because this communist government is ruining the country, and we need our safety back, and so forth. This is Cubanizing. All these things about giving to the poor is about co-opting them for votes, and we can see that it's not actually true. So I just want to let you know that you're not alone. But as a question, does Catholic Charities here have any relationship with institutions abroad, for example, in Brazil or
Yeah, it's interesting, because when you look at the worldwide presence of Catholic Charities, typically they're called Caritas.
Correct.
In everywhere, but a few places. And the United States is one, and France, I think, is Secours Catholique, you know. But typically, Caritas are the organizations. And in most countries, the domestic work and the international work is together. But in the United States, the bishops separated them. So we have Catholic Charities only does domestic work. And Catholic Relief Services does all of the international work. So we're sister organizations.
Yeah. And speaking of sisters, you had a question. You had a question, sister?
I'm Sister Margaret Carey, graduate of STM. And I interned at Horizons for Homeless Children while I was at STM. And as I worked with the homeless children, I also started going to shelters after I graduated in the area. I'm going to be moving down to the south now, Charleston, Georgia area. My question is, when I was there, I also saw the spiritual need. So you talk about evangelization that wasn't being met. And I asked the homeless women with children, what are their spiritual needs? And because I'm a daughter of St. Paul, and our whole work is publishing and getting the word out and communications, I've been exploring since I was in Chicago in the 90s, working, and we opened up reading rooms and Boys and Girls Club in the inner city, and realized the great need also for the spiritual hunger and thirst. But my idea would be to bring laity into that so that they can actually see and touch what poverty looks like. Because I realize that a lot of people are afraid, and I understand that, to even go and visit a shelter or to see. And it wouldn't be to visit as much as to work. Horizons does a great service for these homeless children. they set up play spaces in the shelters across Boston, Massachusetts, and that gives the children a chance to play and the moms a chance to study or to get together and have meetings with whatever 12-step or whatever they need. So would that be, can something like that be done under the umbrella of Catholic Charities in the sense of focusing on Catholic Charities shelters in an area, working, you said diocesan, but working to create something for the laity especially, to be able to go in and see what evangelization means hands-on. God will preach through witness as well as through giving, but giving sometimes comes because they start to see needs and then they see the people, the real people, sort of what happens in prison ministry a lot.
Yeah.
So I know that's a wide statement I just made, but I would love some feedback on that.
Yeah, no, I think that some of the most powerful things that we can do is when we invite volunteers in.
Mm-hmm.
It really is so that you know that poverty then isn't a statistic or but it is a face, it's a name, and that's where real conversion happens as far as people's understanding, acceptance, and it happens, I think, on a spiritual connection with people. I think the other thing about when we invite people in, we also then need to make sure we have a space for them to reflect on that experience, so they aren't taking it home and not having an opportunity to really explore what this is. When you first started your comments, I mean, one of the things about that really irks me is when I hear people saying, well, you know, people who are poor are spiritually deprived, or you know, and the fact of the matter is, the people who are struggling every day, and that survival is an issue, these are some of the most spiritual people I've ever met.
Well, yeah, this is true. I found this out. I guess what I'm saying is there's no one to, like, they don't usually have a church community because they're moving so much, or they don't have anyone to gather them into Lexa Divina, for instance, which is, what we're able to do in our parishes a lot of times. To create spaces for people doesn't exist. So it's not that they're spiritually deprived personally, but I haven't noticed anything that exists within that the areas where they're met, their needs are being met.
Some shelters, Catholic Charity shelters, actually offer Bible study.
Mm-hmm. This is what I didn't know, is what I was asking.
Yes. Yeah, now not all, but some do. There are religious groups that come into Catholic Charities shelters, again, not to proselytize, we're very clear about that, but when they identify themselves who they are, that's an invitation to people to say, if they want to talk about it, they're welcome to, but you can't in any way, like, say, oh, I need you to tell me this or to pray with me about that, you know, but when you say, I'm from Our Savior's Lutheran Church, and we're just here. if the person is looking for that, they will identify that they like that opportunity.
Let me ask one question. It's frequently said, and explicitly so, by the U.S. Bishops that the measure of society can be understood to be, a function of how we treat the least among us. And what kind of scorecard would you give American society on that measure?
Well,
do I need to turn off the recorder?
Yeah. I've only got a couple more months.
So yeah, that's right. No risk.
Let's go back to where that concept came from, and I think that's the Old Testament prophets, where they're saying the widow, the orphan, and the stranger in our midst is how we measure society, how we treat them. And I think when you look at the people who are marginalized in our society, who are they? Children, women, and immigrants. Yeah. So the groups remain the same as we had then. Because when you look at the number of children who are hungry in the United States, the number of children who lack a lot of things and live in deep poverty, I don't know how we can have a very high scorecard. When you look at the number of troubled births, words escaping me right now, in this country is much higher on a percentage wise than throughout the rest of the developed world. How can we say it's okay? And I think the same is true with women. You know, I think women's situation has improved, but they are still the ones who are most impacted by poverty. And then you look at the immigrants. people, I think, have this image that, you know, we are such a welcoming country. Well, Catholic Charities actually is the largest organization that resettles refugees in this country. And we try to do our best, but, you know, people are not given much at all. And in fact, typically what we're doing is bringing people from other countries here who are in at least refugee status to live in poverty. Now, they're also highly motivated people, so they tend to pull themselves out rather quickly. But it really is not because we are bringing them in to that kind of a thing. So your question, I don't think we can be satisfied at all with where we're at right now. In fact, I think we should be embarrassed. And I think we should compare ourselves to the developed world and see where we're at, because we're near the bottom on almost every scale. Is that where we want to be? I think people of faith would say no.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Maggie, do you have one more question to wrap us up?
My sister and father were talking. The irony of the situation is, like Chrysostom will say, Lisa, it's the rich who are spiritually deprived. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if you're attached to their wealth and they don't, and Chrysostom will say, those in poverty are an opportunity to receive blessing and approval from God. You see, so it's the rich who are deprived of spiritual. You know,
well, thanks for that, and thank you especially to Father Snyder for a really enlightening conversation. I remind you that he'll be on a panel this evening taking up these and other broader picture issues tonight at, what, 7, Karen?
Yes.
7 o'clock in McGuinn 121. So please join us for that, too, and expand this conversation.
Let me just end with one thing. Yeah. Is to, again, go back to the book of Proverbs that says, when you do an act of kindness to the poor, it is truly an act of worship.
Mm-hmm.
So which pulls those two things together in our tradition. So I think it's good for us to remember.
Thanks very much.
Yeah.